You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 20th of May. A quick look at Kyle Korver, the weekend's NBA games, and then Tony Jones of The Athletic stops by. Kemba or Tobias, and breaking down the Jazz free agent options. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making the offseason a little bit more fun as a Jazz fan. You can get this program on Himalaya, the new app available for you on your Android or iPhone with customized playlists and helping you through a crazy world of the podcasting space. Also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and tell your smart device when you get in the car to play podcast Locked On Jazz. A lot of things coming up on today's show. But most importantly, Tony Jones of The Athletic is stopping by. We'll have part one and two today, and then parts three and four tomorrow on the show. We'll talk about all Jazz free agency, offseason trades, Ricky Rubio or Derek Favors or all sorts of fun conversations I think you want to hear from just a great dude. Tony Jones is just a really good, enjoyable guy to be with. By the way, Father's Day's coming up. Today's show is brought to you by Untuck It. Dads come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, so should their shirts like tall, short, slim, relax, whatever it is, ever wonder why your father's button-up looks so long or baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off the casual untucked look that isn't sloppy. That's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is a solution that fits just right. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA to get 20% off. And also, Grip Six, our good friends, are literally making the best belts in the world. The Utah company that we talk about a lot are back and have a special site for you, grip6.com/lock. That's grip6.com/lock. All right, let's get to the weekend's events. And then I want to dig into Kyle Korver. The Warriors are just champions. And actually, I think it's interesting on the maybe a little cliched, but the Bucks just can't pull off that game three. Goes to double overtime. Don't have enough plays. The way the Warriors were able to kind of do the exact same thing against Portland. Now, Toronto's probably better than Portland, and that's part of it. But I did think the contrast was interesting. Defenses are winning that series. Toronto's offense was in the 15th percentile. Milwaukee's was in the 8th. Which is a little disconcerting that Milwaukee's offense has not gotten going yet. The other one that I think we watch how NBA basketball then emulates what they see in the playoffs, what the Bucks are doing defensively with Brook Lopez. Last night, Toronto only got 24 shots at the rim, only 26% of their shots at the rim. This has been a reoccurring theme of this whole series. Nick Nurse complained that there were 14 illegal defenses in game two. They're just camping guys out and forcing you to take above the break threes. Toronto's hitting 30% of them last night, which was just enough. Milwaukee, interestingly, went 9 of 29 of those as well. Both teams hit their corner threes, but not their above the break threes, and they are just sitting in the paint and not allowing for Toronto to get to the basket. And that is what this whole series is about. Toronto, we talked about it before the series started, just does not score against Milwaukee. They only got 19 shots at the rim in game two, which was again 26% again in the 9th percentile. This is the rim is the holy grail. Quinn Snyder figured that out offensively this year. Now will teams follow what Milwaukee's done, and we'll see more of that defensively. And if that does become the trend, then Rudy Gobert becomes even more valuable in many, many ways. Let's talk about Kyle Korver. What we don't know is whether Kyle's coming back or not, whether he wants to play. He just gave the commencement speech at Creighton. I just read the transcript of it. Very well done. There's an article at UtahJazz.com about it if you want to read about it. Didn't, you know, as Kyle would, thoughtful, open, insightful. Really, you know, Kyle's a gem. And what we don't know is whether Kyle wants to come back. What I think is really interesting on Kyle is what is fair to project from Kyle next year as a 38-year-old playing. And he's obviously one of the great shooters in the league. If you watch his numbers last year, he shot 38%. And if you start to look at his numbers without LeBron, then you see he was at his last year without LeBron, 15-16. He's at 39.8, which was a little bit of a slide from the incredible 48 seasons of 48%. He was at 41% in his half season without LeBron. And then last year he was at 38%. I think the 2 years with LeBron, where he shoots 48% and 44%, feel to me as though those might be, you know, a little bit high. We used him. He took more shots, I think, per 36 minutes with us than he did at any other point in his entire NBA career. He shot 38%. He was obviously incredibly valuable. But I think... I don't think you can look at him as an NBA player as a 45, 46, 47% three-point shooter anymore. At 38 years old, I think that's too much of an ask. What's amazing about him is that he played, you know, 70 games last year. He still got off 350 three-point shots. I mean, he still is just such a threat and able to get them off, whether it's, you know, off the dribble or on the bounce or anything of that nature. We talk about signs of aging. I mean, certainly his game's a little different than everybody else in that you're not looking for a block or steal rate or things of that nature. And the crazy thing about Kyle is that his steal rate was actually up. His block rate was the exact same. They're not high. But he is seemingly defying a lot of the father time aspects that are there. His win share this year was a 2. The year before was a 2.3. The year before that, it was a 2 in Cleveland. So he's not, there's not any dramatic slippage to who he is. Defensively, still struggles. His rim game, which is just not a prevalent part of his game, but the other way you look at whether somebody is slipping, he only takes 3% of his shots there, so that's probably the sign that that's happened. But he made them when he took him. I mean, I think he was something ridiculous, like 86% in the few shots he took in that realm. So his three-point shooting has certainly, post-LeBron, gone down, and there seems to be just a minor slide. Like, I just don't know if at 38 years old, you really should be expecting that kind of performance out of a player. But he still, you know, the gravity is still there. The concern by opponents is still there, and so therefore his value is still significant. It's really just going to be a question of whether or not Kyle wants to go through the rigor and whether he can get himself going. He felt fairly good at the end of the season other than that knee. But you look at him, his catch-and-shoot three-point shooting was still 40%. His actually off the bounce was 42%, which would probably, if you're aging, you'd see that. He gets caught in a lot of late shot clocks where he has to bail his team out. Defend when he's open, he was at 42% for the Utah Jazz. When he was with Cleveland the year prior and he was wide open, he was at 49%. So there was a little, you know, I don't know if that's age. Anything you do at 38 years old, everyone puts on age. But his wide open shooting the last 3 years has gone from 56 to 49 to 42%. With the Jazz last year, that he just was, you know, whether it was because he was on the move more or whatever, his wide open shooting has slipped over the last three seasons. So that's a little bit different. Defensively, I think he still, you know, battles, plays it positionally, and at 38 years old is has his limitations. So the big question on Kyle is what he wants to do, I think, is obviously the first part. And then the second part is whether the Jazz have an opportunity where between July, I think, 7th on Kyle, they need that money. He's still guaranteed some for next year. So I believe the discrepancy between what he's guaranteed and what he's being scheduled to pay is only between $5 and $7 million, somewhere in that range. So it's not a huge difference to whether or not the Jazz keep him or not. And he's obviously a player you want around. And maybe the most important statistic on Kyle's season is we just kind of do a quick, not as detailed Kyle, because there's not a lot of isolation. There's not a lot of pick and roll. There's not a lot of those things to look at, is the impact that he had on Royce O'Neal and Donovan Mitchell. The shooting of both of those guys increased at a tremendous amount from the moment that he joined the team. And that, I think, is maybe where his value to his teammates is as good as anyone. Take a second, read his commencement address. You'll be proud to root for him and cheer for Kyle. Part of today's show is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. Tony Jones is coming up here in just a second. We'll start off with the debate of Kemba or Tobias in a dream world for the Jazz and talk about much of that today. Then in tomorrow's show, we'll talk about faves, the options there, and then play a game with involving Ricky Rubio where I give a player and his salary compared to Ricky's projected player and salary and which player would you like to have the most. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. The Blazer is back. That's right. Tyson and the great crew out in Woods Cross. The fabulous Blazer is back. You know the truck lineup. Silverado, Colorado. They've been fabulous. I've been fortunate enough to drive both of them. The Silverado is just an absolute luxury truck. It was such a smooth ride. Felt like you were above the world, sitting back in your Lazy Boy chair, just cruising. The Colorado is versatile and fun. It was a great one for us to have around the house. And right now, the Murdoch Million Dollar Sales event is going on. The Equinox, the SUV, four-door, very smooth, good ride, has up to $8,500 off. That's right, that's at Murdoch Chevy right now, and these are only good until May. The new Blazer is out. You got to check it out. It is sweet looking, and check out as well while you're there. The Traverse is got the third row of seats and a little bit larger SUV for your family. That's all at Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross as well as in Logan. The much anticipated Tony Jones of The Athletic interview. I always love these. Have people figured out that we get along yet, or do you think they still think just because we don't agree on the same things about basketball that, like, they think we're like Republicans and Democrats, that, like, if we disagree, actually, that's, like, if we disagree that we actually have to, like, hate each other, despise each other, hang up on each other, like, choose our friends based on it, unlike hoops, where you see the game one way, I see it the other, and we just kind of move on.
I think people think that we hate each other. But that's because people thought that you and Brian T. Smith hated each other, and I think they were right about that one.
There are certain things that people are accurate about, but you're a good human being.
See, I don't want to bring that up and get into that, but yeah, see, like they think the like.
But that had nothing. Funny that has is, nothing to do, that has nothing to do with. Never mind. That had nothing
that
to do with basketball.
Basketball,
right?
Yeah, but the funny thing is, and. And I actually told somebody this on Twitter was that, I mean, I think Jazz fans are lucky that we hardly ever agree because with our voices in the market and with some of the things that we've carved out for ourselves, each other, individually, I think it's good that there are two people. I think it's good that there are differing viewpoints on a lot of stuff. And it's not bad. It's just, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you do one thing, I do another. You see the game one way, I see the game another. But I think at the end of the day, I think that, you know, we see things the same way.
Well, I mean, I'm right.
You know
I'm,
what I mean?
I'm right and you're wrong, so it's all good.
Yeah, see, that's perfect. End of interview.
All right, Kemba or Tobias in your Jazz dream world?
I already know what you're going to say, but you already know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Kemba, and you're going to say Tobias.
I think it's an interesting discussion. I've actually probably wavered a little bit recently on it. Why do you say Kemba?
Because there are – so, all right, so Stephen Curry, Damian Lillard, Kyrie Irving, right? Kemba Walker – doesn't bend the defense quite as much as those guys, but is very, very close. And the way Kemba gets from point A to point B off the dribble, there are very few guys that can get from point A to point B off the dribble anytime they want, through any kind of defense, no matter what you do. And Kemba's one of those guys. Donovan, for as good as he is, and I think he can actually get there, but he's not yet one of those guys. Kemba can get from point A to point B off the dribble pretty much anytime he wants. And I think if you put that with Donovan and you put that with this defense that he'll have around him, and you put some shooters on the wings, you put some shooters around him, this could be the Jazz could be a devastating two-way team.
Okay, so Kemba last year ran the third most amount of pick and rolls in the NBA, and was awesome at it at 1.06. The only guys that like ran that much that were better were Damian Lillard, Lou Williams, and that's about it. So to your point, this is one of the great pick and roll players in the NBA, and the Jazz run the most pick and rolls of anyone in the league. I think that is where you make your case. And then the fact that these are the four players he ran the most. Actually, it's even more fun if we do the five players that Kemba ran the most pick and rolls with last year. Cody Zeller, Marvin Williams, Bismack Biyombo, Willie Hernangómez, Frank Kaminsky, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Right. So replace that with Rudy Gobert,
who's probably the elite roller in the league.
Exactly. And who's probably one of the three or four best pick setters in the league. Because when Rudy Gobert sets picks, you're going to get separation coming off of those picks. Because he sets picks, he's elite at setting picks and spreading out, and he's elite at resetting. So he doesn't just set. He can reset if the initial pick doesn't get the separation that he wants. It's the reason why Joe Ingles gets downhill so much off the dribble. Not because of his athleticism, because Rudy Gobert sets terrific picks, like elite picks. So you do that with Kemba. Then if you run into Houston or you run into Golden State and those guys say, okay, we're not going to let you run pick and roll. We're just going to switch everything. Well, guess what? Kemba's going to go by them. You know, Donovan can do the same thing, but Kemba can do the same thing. Okay. And then the third thing that I like about Kemba, and the same thing with Donovan, Kemba can be a spot-up shooter. So Kemba's presence on the team doesn't prevent Donovan from doing his thing.
Let's touch on that for a minute. Donovan Mitchell is the best dude on the planet. Before I make these next comments, let's make sure we're clear on this. Like, I am raising children right now who I hope are like Donovan Mitchell, right? You would agree with me?
Right.
Like, I look
agreed.
At that. That is the biggest compliment I can give him, is that that's what I'm looking for. I also, he is not wearing a sweatshirt with his spider logo on it to be the number two guy.
And I don't think he has to be the number two guy. So, and I agree with you to your point, right? So if the Jazz were to get Tobias Harris, there's a clear hierarchy, right? Donovan's still the number one guy, no doubt the number one guy, and Tobias is the number two guy. But there's nothing wrong with having co-number ones. Look at Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. Now, if you want to make a counter-argument, you can counter-argue and say that Stephen Curry is clearly taking a step back to let Kevin Durant do his thing, and we're seeing that in the playoffs. Now he's back to being number one. He looks like 2016 Stephen Curry again. But I think with the way the NBA is, how many possessions are in an NBA game, I think that if Kemba Walker were on the team, I think that Quinn Snyder would adjust the pace of play. And thirdly, I think that if, you know, you had Donovan Mitchell and Kemba Walker on the same team, guess what? Quinn Snyder says, okay, I know I have these two alphas in my lineup. I'm going to stagger. I think that there's more than enough of a pie to go around.
It would be a delicate dance, right? I mean, it would take some, don't you think?
Right. I think the only question is who takes the last shot. I think that's the big question. Who takes the last shot in the last five? Who takes the shot in the last 5 minutes? Who has the most possessions in the last 5 minutes? But I think in the first 43 minutes, I think it can be done rather seamlessly.
It's an interesting one. Do you think they're too small defensively?
No, because I think obviously Kemba's small. But I think that, you know, Donovan has enough length that doesn't bother him. I think you have length on the perimeter with Joe and Royce. You know, you can sprinkle Dante in. Obviously, there's length there. And then obviously you have Rudy at the rim. I think it could be a problem in some playoff matchups. I think if you got Golden State or if you got any team with a Kevin Durant, that's a problem, especially if you want to switch everything. But it's not enough of a problem that you just don't go out and say, hey, Kemba, please just tell us now.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let me address the one other problem. Donovan's not very good defensively yet. Kemba doesn't give
he
him.
He hasn't.
Kemba doesn't give him any shield, right?
Like, exactly.
Is there an element that if you're building a team around Donovan and Rudy, that the guy next to Donovan actually needs to be Garrett Temple? Like, he's not using a lot of possessions. He's a pretty good shooter, and he can guard whoever you need him to guard of the guards so that you're shielding the other guy. Like, I know Garrett Temple's a boring name, but he's a damn good defender at 6'6", who can handle either the one or the two defensively. If Reggie Bullock was a little better defensively, I'd probably include him in this name. What, any thought that that's actually, if you're building a team around Donovan and Rudy, that the piece that you actually need next to Donovan is a shooting defensive guard?
Okay, that's fine, but then you better have Tobias Harris. Because then you have to have, I think if we learned anything this playoff, the Jazz have to have another dynamic defensive presence, a dynamic offensive presence. Like, there just has to be one more dynamic offensive presence there. So you can do that. Or what if you say, Brooklyn, we know you're getting Kyrie Irving or whatever. What do you want for Spencer Dinwiddie?
You're not going D'Angelo Russell?
Or D'Angelo Russell. Well, D'Angelo Russell, I mean, if you renounce D'Angelo Russell, you can go that way. Or you can say, what do you want for Spencer Dinwiddie? Spencer Dinwiddie is 6'6". He defends well. He's a good point guard. He can score the ball. He checks a lot of boxes.
You disappoint me so much. I'm so disappointed in you, Tony Jones of The Athletic. I'll explain to you why when we return on Locked On Jazz Plus. We'll dig into the Tobias Harris angle and ask the question, if you're building a team around Rudy Gobert, what's best to put next to him? We'll continue with Tony Jones of The Athletic here on Locked On Jazz. Make sure you follow Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. It gives you a chance to follow all of the Locked On Podcast Network hosts at one spot. It's Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. That's part one with Tony Jones. Thanks to Grip 6 for bringing you part of today's program. Go to grip6.com/lock. They are literally making the best belts ever made. Easy, thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, and even moms and wives. They have a women's collection now. Ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap, and it carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat against the waist, making the belt super comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flap, and no bulk. Go to grip6.com/lock. More with Tony Jones coming up. But first, Spencer Nelson stops by to give us some insight and information about where he's working right now, Irongate Global Advisors. I want to tell you about Irongate Global Advisors, a financial group out of Salt Lake City, small shop that understands your journey, aren't pushing products on you, and have a strategy, direction, and process. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State great, who, by the way, has an MBA, accounting and finance background degrees, and worked Wall Street and private equity. And he tells me about the personnel. Brian is the chief investment officer.
Brian's a long-term investor, Warren Buffett disciple with a proven track record of active management. He views investing as not trading stocks, but buying pieces of businesses that he believes in. He's focused on not getting caught up in what's hot today or tomorrow, but doing the research, looking 1, 3, 5, even 10 years out with a very patient, methodical approach.
Couple that with Brett and his longtime options background, and you have a versatile group. It's Irongate Global Advisors. To find out more about Iron Gate Financial, give Spencer a call, 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334, or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. Here is why I am so disappointed in you, Tony Jones. I tried set a trap and have you fall for the inefficient, high usage, high scoring guard in D'Angelo Russell, and you didn't fall for it. Like, D'Angelo Russell is Tony Jones' guy. He is the essence of how you and I view the game differently. You're supposed to love the in the veins and all that crap, and all I can look at is how incredibly inefficient he is, and you didn't even fall for it.
Listen, you can get Spencer Dinwiddie. Okay, so...
I like Spencer Dinwiddie so much more than D'Angelo Russell. We just agreed. It's a bad day.
Dogs and cats living there. Okay. First of all, let me be honest. I really like D'Angelo Russell. Like, I actually think he would help, like, because he gets buckets. And I think he gets buckets in the half court. I'm not even going to touch how inefficient he was in the playoffs and how much he stunk in the playoffs. Like, he stunk in the playoffs. But I'm going to say that D'Angelo Russell in a half court game, in a half court NBA playoff setting, can get you buckets. And that would help the Jazz. Now, but let's throw that all that out. Okay.
Okay, wait a second. I just want to make sure everybody knows, don't fall for that. That's not true. He wouldn't help the Jazz. He's in the 13th percentile of players shooting at the rim. He never goes to the line. He's like in the 8th percentile of drawing fouls. He is an inefficient scorer, and the last thing we next need to, next to Donovan Mitchell right now, is an inefficient scorer. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So
with a, okay. By the way, with a 98 percentile usage rate last year.
That I'm trying to find ways for the Jazz to get better while keeping Derek Favors, because
right,
that's what they want to do.
All right, now we're talking. But let's go. That'll be tomorrow. Let's go to. If you're building a roster around Rudy Gobert,
right?
What do you want as your what is the four piece next to Gobert, and then like what is the guard line? What is it you want around Gobert?
Well, I mean, I think the four pieces next to Gobert looks a lot like Tobias Harris. I just worry about Tobias' defense. It's not good.
You're generous.
And it hasn't been good. It hasn't been good.
You're generous with not good.
Yeah, well, I know I'm generous without good. With not good. I mean, I remember when the Jazz beat the Clippers in January, and they just took Tobias to town. Pretty much on every possession. They hunted him. I thought he was a little better in the playoffs. At least he tried. But, you know, that's the worry. Like, the worry is that, the problem with the Jazz earlier in the season was because the guys on the perimeter were not staying in front of guys, and Rudy can't guard everything at once. So, if Tobias plays here, he's got to stay in front of people, and that's the worry.
How much does Rudy protect some – like, Jazz defensive rating with Jay Crowder, with Joe Johnson sometimes, with Thabo Sefolosha, with Rudy at the five, with every stretch four he's played with has been really, really good. Not as elite as the Favors combination, certainly, but how much does Rudy just protect somebody defensively?
I think he does to an extent, but you have to help him out first. Like in November and December and late October, right? like guys are just blowing past Ricky Rubio. And he can't protect you if they're blowing past you, right? And then in January and February, it got better because Ricky Rubio was staying in front to a point where then Rudy could protect. So if you want Rudy to help you, you have to help him first. Like, you have to deter. You don't have to stop. You have to deter. And I think that that's the common misconception that people get. Like, they're like, okay, well, go and get Jabari Parker because Rudy Gobert's behind him. Or go and get Nikola Mirotic because Rudy Gobert's behind him. Those guys have to, they have to stay in front. You have to stay in front first, and that allows Rudy to do his thing. But if guys are blowing past and Rudy's got to deal with whoever Rudy's guarding at the time, and he can't sufficiently get there, then it doesn't much matter, if you know what I mean.
By the way, just – and I actually kind of agree with you, and I didn't think he was great during the playoffs. And I just don't know statistically how to prove defense. Tobias Harris's defensive plus minus is not bad, which is generally the best way out there. And the on-off defensive numbers for Tobias Harris this year were actually okay. They weren't great. Like, I mean, they were – his actually whole plus minus this year in Philadelphia wasn't very good. And in the Clippers, it wasn't great. I mean, there's a legitimate – I mean, his defensive plus minus – his defensive numbers in Detroit and L.A. the first years were – terrible. They were in the, like, the plus minus difference was in like the 5th and 13th percentile. It was terrible. So I think it's a very legitimate concern. You're making a mammoth change to who the Jazz are in regards to what that position does. Now, can I sell my Tobias Harris case on for you?
Yes. Let me just say this. I'll sum this up before you say this. If Tobias can actually be adequate defensively, he's dynamic enough offensively that it makes up for him being just adequate defensively.
So I think that the biggest change that's about to happen in the NBA is pick and roll out of every position. Okay? That's the next wave to me, is that you're – like, Joe Ingles is so successful in the pick and roll because of Gobert's picks, like you said in the last segment, but also because the guy guarding him is not used to guarding the pick and roll because he's a small forward. Pick and roll's been point guard – it is with the switching defenses and everything that's going on, pick and roll is going to become 1-4, maybe even 1-5 running. We saw Jokic Murray inverted pick and roll dominate a series. So I think the next step in this league is that ball handling at every position running the pick and roll. With that said, I think Tobias Harris is the single most untapped offensive player in the league. He ran the most. Go ahead.
I don't disagree.
He ran the most pick and rolls of any power forward in the NBA this year. He ran almost 1,300. If you believe Durant's a four, he ran 1,100. And Blake Griffin ran 980. The next closest in the NBA is Rudy Gay at 389. He ran, and he was good at it. The only guys that were better were Blake and Kevin Durant, and those are all-stars. His isolation game, he ran the fourth most amount of isolations of any four in the league, Julius Randle in there as well. He was the best of everyone in isolation. And his drive game, which we run the have the most drives of any team in the league, you think about our advantage basketball, giving it out to Harris and letting him go, he had 762 drives this year, which is more than any other player at that league and the in the league. And the only guys that were better were Durant, Blake Griffin, Julius Randle, and Pascal Siakam. I think if he gets in the right offensive system, he has got another level offensively to who he is.
So here's the thing. One of the things that I like, and this backs up everything that you said, one of the things that I like about Tobias Harris is that he is a playmaker out of his spot. If he gets a rebound, everybody can just run because he can get a rebound and go. And he can handle the ball in the half court. He can score from three-point range. He can score at the basket. He can score from 15 to 18 feet. He can spot up. or he can play with the ball in his hands. And he's been in every kind of position, right? Like, he was in Orlando with a young team. He was the man in, with the Los Angeles Clippers. He was a third option with the Philadelphia 76ers, and maybe actually even the fourth option, depending on where you see Ben Simmons. So he's been in a lot of situations, and he's 26 years old. And that's probably, to me, your biggest argument, the biggest argument to be had for Tobias Harris over Kemba Walker. If you give Kemba Walker a four-year max, you're going to really have to sweat out the last 2 years of that deal. Like, the first 2 years of that deal, you're confident that he's going to be Kemba Walker, right? You're confident that he's going to be the guy. But Kemba Walker is a six-foot point guard who has played a ton of minutes, has a ton of miles on him, and his entire game is based off of his first step. So what if he loses that first step in ages 31 and 32, which would be years 3 and 4 of that contract? If you give Tobias Harris this contract, he's 26 years old. You know that you're going to be good, that he's going to be peak Tobias Harris for the entire length of that four-year contract. So that, to me, is probably your biggest argument that you know, you want Tobias Harris over Kemba Walker. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, his age matches Rudy, and Donovan's an old second-year player at 22 or 23 by the time next year starts. So he absolutely matches their age and their progression. Donovan's ahead of the game progression. So they're absolutely on the same path. And I think if you think about – I actually think the Tobias Harris deal, if the Jazz got Tobias Harris, I think it's the Jeff – I don't know that they go to the two finals, but I think it's the equivalent of the Jeff Hornacek move from Jeff Malone. I think it's where it just changes them a little bit, alters who they are, and now you have your three pieces that you're moving forward with, and you're adjusting every piece around there.
Right, and you can adapt, and you can adjust for 4 years.
Yeah, and frankly, that's what this league is. Like, you get three core pieces. Now you go fiddle everything else around. Let me ask you one more about Tobias. We'll talk about favors for tomorrow's show. If you're Tobias Harris, you were the fourth option in Philadelphia. I know they can offer him just a buttload of money. Are you signing there? If Jimmy comes back, are you signing on at 26 years old with the amount of talent I just talked about to take the fourth fiddle?
I'm going to say yes, because I think that they're going to lose Jimmy Butler. That's my thought. But if Jimmy Butler signs there and they say, hey, Tobias, here's 5 year max, then to me, I mean, it's a question, because, you know, if you're Tobias Harris, I mean, you know, everybody's playing for their legacy. And I don't think that even if they kept all four of those guys together, I don't think they're going to win the East anytime soon, because I don't think they're better than Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's just starting. You know, and if Kevin Durant goes East, if Kyrie Irving stays East, if those two guys team up somewhere in New York, whether it be with Brooklyn or whether it be with the Knicks, then boom, you got another monster instantly in the East, especially if the Knicks were able to trade for Anthony Davis. So if you're Tobias Harris, you know, you have Donovan Mitchell, you have Rudy Gobert, you have Quinn Snyder, you have that front office. To me, those are four titans right there with the Jazz. Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, the Jazz front office, and Quinn Snyder. To me, those are four titans. Those are four of the best people in the entire NBA at what they do. And that's a lot for one team to have. So to me, I mean, I think the Jazz are an attractive option to me.
Super fun with Tony Jones today. Thanks so much for stopping by to TJ. He'll be back with us tomorrow on the program. Thanks to Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com. And remember, untuckit.com, promo code NBA to get 20% off, and grip6.com/lock. A lot of Father's Day opportunities for you. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They support the program. It is Locked On Jazz. Go check out Locked On NBA today, and Tony Jones more tomorrow. David James later in the week here on Locked On Jazz.